Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we'll be with you for the next hour. We apologize. We got started on time, and as Mother Nature would have it, or Mother somebody else, we got knocked off the air, not once, but twice, and we had some difficulty reestablishing our connection. If by any chance we get a jittery signal, that's because we have jitter on the line. I can tell you that. I can see it. I'm hearing it a little bit, but we'll work through that. We've got a very important message tonight with our guest. Before I bring tonight's guest on board Evident Footprints, I have a special favor to ask my listening audience. I got word this evening that my father became gravely ill and was taken to a hospital. I won't go into great detail about his issue, because that is a private matter, but something I seldom, if ever, ask the listeners to do is to consider saying a prayer for my father and wishing him well. This is a very serious matter, and I had a talk with him, even though he was unable to talk. Actually, he's not even conscious. And Spirit told me that I should go ahead with tonight's show, that it's important, and that I could enlist some help from many prayer warriors I know who are out there. So I'm asking you, in the utmost of humility, to consider praying for my father this night, that he makes it through the night, and that he doesn't leave us yet. We have a lot of work to do. My father is a fighter, and so it's that fighter in me that I got from him, the man who brought me into this world, of course, with the help of my mother, and I have everything I am as a person, especially in music, comes from my father. My tenacity, my wit, if I have any wit, and certainly my unwillingness to accept less than freedom as a sovereign being created by God. We all have that right, and my father is a perfect example of that. And so I ask you again if you could kindly say a prayer for my father before you go to bed tonight. I would appreciate it very much. With that, the show is going to go on tonight. I'm hoping that I can report back some good news, and that I don't have to miss a show. If for some reason I'm not on the air tomorrow, I will have a replacement. We will do something. If I can't find a replacement, we will certainly play an archive of an important show. With that, on this February the 11th on the West Coast, or now in the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, February 12th, I would like to bring again my good friend, a wonderful author, researcher, and even an expert in nutrients, supplements, and sound health, my good friend, Dr. Qasim Khalil. Dr. K, welcome to the show tonight.
Great to be back again. My pleasure. So much to go over, there's no doubt.
Yes, we've got a lot to cover. On the past shows, you and I have been discussing some issues that have, I think, independently drawn both of our attention. You have written the book Wrongly Blamed, which we have featured on a number of shows, and it bears repeating that you are one of the foremost, if not the foremost, expert on what occurred on 9/11, not just in New York City or the Pentagon, but even at that lonely field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah, Sure.
And on an international level, you are quite familiar. And we've been following a path together, sort of a parallel path. And we noticed that we're both researching these things. And I'd like mm-hmm. you to talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Well, perhaps wrongly blamed is the keynote book, which uncovers cloaked individuals, individuals who masquerade as others and through that masquerade perpetrate terror acts as a sort of hiree or agent or subsidiary of very, very powerful people. So you have these subsidiaries, you have these surrogates that are relatively minor players who are under disguise with many falsified IDs. And I cracked that in the book for the first time on an active agent who, it turns out, was dressing like he was somebody else. In this case, he was the individual was dressing, and this was in London. He was dressing like a Muslim. He, I think, raised a beard. He had the long kind of a gown, although Muslims in Western countries wear Western clothes, wear other kinds of clothes, all kinds of clothes. He had a woman who may have originally been Christian, may be Jewish, doesn't matter. She wore a full veil, but she wasn't an Islamic person. So they had quite a masquerade going, and he had associates. This individual was involved with bombing the tubes, okay? And he was caught, but it was buried, and as you know, you've done when you dig, I dug it back up and published it all based on Italian interviews. The Italian police had caught him. His name originally was purported to be Usman Hussein. It turned out that that was false. He was not Somalian. That was a fabrication. He came into London on the basis of being a refugee from Somalia. That was a fabrication. He was an Israeli. He was dark-skinned, Ethiopian. Remember they did that, Sharon did that 90,000 Ethiopian Jews to Israel campaign?
Yes.
To displace and force out the people?
Mm-hmm.
And so they turned these dark-skinned people into Mossad agents. He was caught, and he's in prison. This is one of the basis of conflict now between the Zionist state and Britain, the Zionist
yes.
entity. But these individuals are everywhere, and you would never know it. This guy was going from mosque to mosque, parading himself as a Muslim. That's the important thing, creating every kind of a strife. In fact, it got so hot and heavy with this thug that he punched the mosque elder in London in the face and knocked out his teeth, because he was trying to get everybody radicalized, everybody to get inflamed. And you see, that is the. In fact, they tried to assassinate him. They thought he was a loose cannon. And you remember Menezes, the
mm-hmm.
Brazilian Charles de Menezes, who was just a normal electrician in London. And they were told, the hit agencies, told to hit him. Not to check him out, not to see if he had a backpack, but to kill him. They killed him thinking he was this Jew, because the guy got out of the box. So that's the kind of work that we're now doing here in this country, because it's worse here than it is in London.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's paid any attention to it. You know, and then you did the work on Obama, and we kind of joined hands. But this is a real issue. And you know what's interesting is, as you started to trace the finance, these individuals are very well paid. This is not a minor game for these. We found one of these individuals who's got $25 million in one bank account alone. And this was one of the, you know, one of the 911 spies.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. K, I just want to, you know, I'm putting myself in the place of the listening audience, and considering that there are people out there that are going to have a bit of difficulty with what we're going to talk about tonight, just because they have been told a story and they have seen images on television and heard countless accounts of what occurred on 9/11. And yet, you and I, through our research, and there are others, we through our research, we have come upon others who are doing the same type of research, and they're examining videos, they're examining the so-called interviews on the street, or these interviews which are staged, even in studios where they take the background footage and they put these people in front of a camera and make it appear that they're right there on the scene on September 11th, 2001, when in reality, these are this is a psyops plot to, again, fabricate more evidence as if all these videos are coming out. Did we forget the smoke clouds and the buildings crashing to the ground on that day? You know, and they have these sunlit, standing under an awning type interviews, and these people don't have a mark on their clothes, not a speck of dust.
Right.
You see, it's nothing like the terror that you saw in people's faces. It's nothing, like the chaos that was out on the streets and all over Manhattan for that matter, and all over this country and all over the world.
Oh, yes. There's three examples of that. As you know, for example, on 911, there was that phony, which everybody should try to identify, with that big smile and the baseball cap, that CIA Mossad, whatever, he was an espionage operative, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy said, oh, yeah, you know, like you said, there's no dust on him. Oh, yeah, the plane, I saw it coming in, and it struck there, and, of course, that jet fuel, that burned, and it weakened the girders, and it collapsed. Yeah,
you're getting that explanation from a guy on the street in the midst of all this chaos, right?
Yeah, and he's
right?
got all of this going on. And so you had it there. You had it in London also. You had a number of individuals that were witnessing against everybody, including Benjamin Netanyahu, who came out immediately out of his hotel room and said, oh, yeah, it's time for World War III, including Giuliani, who was there and said, oh, yeah, we've got to go out and fight those Muslims. That was the London bombing 7/7.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, in each of these terror attacks, we can point out the agent's provocateur. It's not difficult. They always have the same pattern. I mean, there's a couple different tactics they do, and we'll cover those today.
Right? Yes. Now, so the underlying point here is that people are confronted with a situation. In this case, they're shown a video which is represented as being genuine. And right away, they accept that as, well, it must be real because they caught it on film. This person's talking. I'm hearing the person talk. This is, he's on the street, although you can't really see where they're standing, can you?
No,
you can't see in reference to the buildings. You can't. Yes, there's a building there. You get the impression they're in the sunlight, and that smoke hung over New York City for days. You remember
true.
That?
That's true. Very good.
And so you would not get a clear air picture of anyone for days. So they had to have taken these pictures at another time.
Well, that's a very, very good point. I mean, I think you're the first to observe that would have been an in-studio fabrication. But I suppose to really get us to understand this, the creme de la creme of these frauds is probably the incubator story that was fabricated by the Kuwaitis in concert, the Kuwaiti gamblers and the Kuwaiti corrupt ones in concert with the corrupt ones in the United States. And we have to understand the mechanism of this. It goes back to my friend from Procter & Gamble, who said, look, we will do anything to get a VNR, you know, the video clip that goes up to the satellite, if it will sell goods. I mean, we'll fabricate any kind of story you want, if it will help us, get our good out there. And what it is, people, is that the powerful corporations and the powerful entities create their, in the PR groups, they create the campaign for what they want to achieve. In this case, the firm that was used for the fake incubator was H&K, what the initials are we'll get into. It's Hill and Knowlton. And Hill and Knowlton was asked by the corrupt Kuwaitis, in coordination with the U.S. government, to fabricate a story that would get the American people whipped up. And this was that Iraqi soldiers took babies and smashed them out of the incubators. Well, they didn't have any incubators to speak of in Kuwait at that time. So it was all a lie, well-crafted, got everybody revved up, and that's what they do, is they put that up on satellite, then all the networks, some innocently, mostly perpetratingly, they take it and run it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened on 911. They had the stuff up there, the feed, and they, like you said, very wisely, they did it in advance.
Yes. Now, those are not the only anomalies with these films, too. I listen to these films with headphones, and unlike listening in a room, you know, I listen in a studio where the sound is dry, and you immediately notice things like room ambience. And these people are out on the street being interviewed in all of this chaos, and you hear the reverberation of a small room.
Mm-hmm.
It might be 20 by 15 feet or 40 by 20 feet or 40 by 30 feet. It really doesn't matter. I hear room reverb. You understand?
And they've got all these VNRs ready to go. It reminds me of Bryant Scrumble, you know, and he, remember there is a clip of him when Dan Dollar and other people on the ground a few yards from the World Trade Center said, no, we heard an explosion. No, we saw an explosion. We didn't see a plane. And he went back and let's rerun that tape. We're going to rewind that tape and put it back mm-hmm. out because we think, there's just an explosion. There isn't a plane, actually.
Yes,
so, and they had the wrong clip in there.
Yeah, and then he actually had the audacity to conduct an interview with the wife of one of his executive producers or directors there at NBC, who described from Hoboken the second plane hitting the building.
Yeah, while the people on the ground rejected it.
Yes, exactly. So you can see that they're trying to legitimize this by talking to relatives, and we don't even know that that woman was a relative of anyone.
Right, and you know, with the passenger list, Holmgren showed they did the same thing with the passenger list. They actually said, you know, on the 13th and 14th of September, okay, we now have a passenger list based on call-ins from relatives and police and other military agencies. Have you ever had a passenger list produced by relatives? It's produced by the airline people.
That's correct.
Same story.
And the passengers don't give medical accounts of what happened to the victims.
Yeah, not at all.
It's the people that do the DNA testing that do that.
That's right. And if you want to try to figure out why all this fabrication, somebody wanted a war in a very, very big way. And whatever, you know, the consequences of that war are, there were an awful lot of big hitters that really, really wanted to create the climate of warfare, not the least of which is Dov Zakheim's Booz Allen Hamilton, Halliburton, and certainly Raytheon, General
mm-hmm.
Dynamics, all of them dependent on achieving this terror attack.
Yes. Now, as I go back to my earliest shows, and these would even include times when I called in as a caller to a particular show, maybe on another network. Say RBN, for example, Republic Broadcasting Network, which is considered to be a patriot network. This is where political issues and the New World Order and all of these issues, even 9/11, are discussed. Now, there are a lot of people that say, oh, forget about 9/11. Forget about it. Well, where is that coming from? How can you say that to the families that lost people on 9/11? How can you say, forget about your relatives? Forget about the traitorous acts that were committed on your country. Forget about it as if it's going to somehow magically go away and leave your consciousness or your subconsciousness. Absolutely not. In fact, the more you try to forget about it, the more it comes back.
Yeah. There are cops that pursue murder crimes for 30, 40 years.
Oh, yes. And here we have a case of mass murder, and just looking at the response of our government, their unwillingness to investigate this says it all right there. Their complicity.
Definitely. No doubt.
It doesn't take a genius. Now, with us coming out with this new information, and we're not the only ones, we're discovering that there are actually some absolutely fantastic presentations and analyses of what occurred on 9/11 and the films that we were shown on TV and later by the No Day Brothers. this film that they supposedly shot there, catching the first plane, striking, and you can see the signals being given to everybody on the street, especially to Jules Naudet, when to aim his camera up at the building.
Incredible. Incredible.
Okay. All right. You saw that. I saw that. And definitely the person that produced that video saw that, did he not?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's
definitely
called the Not It Brothers. Okay. So we've seen that video. We've studied another person's analysis of it. And even in the process of that, you and I have both seen other things that he doesn't even mention in the film.
Oh, definitely. There's a great wealth of proof of fraud and deception and premeditation of murder, conspiracy against humanity. It's all in there. It's quite revealing, actually, all that those are just with that so-called French accent. No, don't pay attention to that noise. It's just bodies falling to the ground. You know, all right, like you said, and I will quote you, don't insult my intelligence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bodies falling into the ground do not crack marble and glass, okay?
Yeah,
we know
you can
that bodies, yeah.
You can mock my intuition. You can mock my discernment. You can mock my method of logic, but don't insult my intelligence. That's kind of how I said it.
Yeah,
and anyone that has done the amount of research that you and I have, and we're not just talking about looking at some film. You see, people say, I saw it on TV, so therefore it was real. And I say to you, folks, have you not seen a baseball game that was being broadcast at a different time than the radio description? Usually the radio is live, and they have a delay, so that they can X out or they can bleep out curse words if someone should accidentally swear. And it doesn't matter if it's the announcer or someone in the booth producing the sound, a director, a sound man, or pick up some profanity coming out of the crowd, which if you've ever sat at a baseball game or any professional sporting event, you're going to hear natural things, because people they're very unrestrained at such events.
That's
so
true.
They send a delayed signal. Now, the TV is even delayed after the radio. To listen to or to watch a baseball game on TV and listen to your favorite radio announcer, who happen to usually be better descriptors of such events, you will have to turn your TV sound down. You will hear him say strike three before the guy even swings the bat. Now, we had at least a 17-second delay, and a lot of what we saw on 9/11 was film.
Yeah,
sure. Just the fact that it's delayed is telling you that it's a film. Do you understand? It's captured and it's re-streamed out to the public. Now we think we're seeing it in real time, and you have I've worked in that industry. I've worked in music production, and I see how they lay the music into the event after the event. Okay? A live sporting event is quite a bit different than a news broadcast. They spend all day preparing what they show you in a half an hour. And isn't it interesting how they all get it the same? They all show the same film, the same angles. Oh, they pull the camera angle back. You know, they zoom in or they zoom out to make it look a little bit different. But
sure.
No one asks the question, how do they get that camera up at 85 stories to film that event?
Well, that's a very good point, because you do see it mostly from, as you mentioned, an eye level. You are seeing the side of that plane. You're not seeing the underbelly. And we all know when we see a plane, when we see a jetliner, we're primarily looking at the underbelly. We're not, we can sense the silhouette of the rest. And also another thing, in addition to the fabrication on video, one has to ask the question, whenever there's a jet in a populated area or wherever, it has a certain descent to it. It doesn't just appear out of nowhere, out of the side of the camera. It comes down and down and down. It cannot just suddenly appear. And one of the things that always shocked me whenever I watched those videos in 2001, 2002, is it just comes out of nowhere, you know?
And if I might say, and I mentioned this to you before, is that the sounds in a city, if you've ever been to a city and stayed in a hotel, and a city where the, or a hotel where the air conditioner didn't work, and you had to open your windows just to get some airflow through there, and you hear the rush hour traffic in Manhattan, it can be deafening.
Yeah.
And we heard no sound of traffic. We heard a man say something about, well, there's nothing here, no gas leak here. And then all of a sudden, we see a man walking past. We see one of the people who is standing there with the fire department look up at the building, look up in the air as if it's a signal to point the camera. The man walks across the street, and then the camera shifts. And we hear the sound of what sounds like a twin-engine airplane. It sounds like a Piper Cub. It doesn't sound like a jet.
You don't hear,
you don't hear the roaring of the turbines, and certainly you wouldn't hear this guy talk if a jet flew over there.
I'm sure that that was stock plane recording that they inserted in there.
Yeah, and it was a poor selection of a special effect, I'll tell you
that.
I've worked.
But you're right about the deafening nature. You know, they have huge swaths of land that they have to set aside for where the close to the houses, and they put barrier walls up. And now in O'Hare, they've got a new project to widen the area of barrier and the area of protection for damage to eardrums and chronic noise pollution from the jet airplanes. Now that's coming in at a suburban area, in the center of high rises. At 700 feet, as you said, it would be deafening. Absolutely deafening. And there was there was no wind thrust. You know, the wind, the spinning from the wind of those jet airline engines, the effect of that blast, incredible.
Yes. Now, I've done quite a bit of additional dialogue recording, and one of the first things that we do when we're doing that, and that's where they go in the studio and correct lines or change the modulation of a voice or maybe even change the words because someone has used profanity in the original film and they want to show it on TV, and so they have to edit that out, and rather than go beep, they decide they're going to redo the voice. And often you can hear the sound in a room. And I give you an example. It's a movie they're showing on American Movie Classics quite a bit recently, The Godfather. And Mo Green is being confronted in his Las Vegas casino by Michael Corleone, and he's swearing. And at that point, it goes from the room echo to an absolutely dry sound. Now, he's in a room that's echoing, and there's no reason why his voice should stop echoing when he's yelling. He's swearing, okay? And they redo this dialogue, and he's talking at a very soft voice, and you know, you can tell he's in an ADR studio, and they dubbed his voice in to remove the profanity so they can show that on TV.
I see.
Now that's the opposite of what they did on these outside sidewalk interviews. You should hear the chaos there. And you hear a dry-sounding voice because this voice is competing with all of this sound, and you hear a room echo like the guy's in a bathroom or in a big hardwood-floored room with marble walls and no furniture.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
That's the acoustics or the ambience of those recordings. Totally fabricated. Absolutely 100% totally fabricated. I will stake my reputation on that.
And they didn't show the live interviews, but maybe once, and then buried those where the people came out and said, no, there was no plane. I was standing right there. What do you mean plane? Why are you saying plane? It was an explosion. I was there.
Yes.
Those things are now, they're in archive in the internet, but of course those were spun out so that people couldn't get a total picture. And
yeah.
So we've covered that. We've covered the fabrication of the videos. We've covered the fact of the nose out where they show it looks like a finger punching out the other side of the World Trade Center. We've covered the issue of the black lines that they've used and some of the pixelating and some of the problems that occur when they when they layer videos. We've covered the fact that the plane can't cut through the world, you know, the World Trade Center. I would add to that that Amsterdam was struck by a 747, which is about three times as big and heavy as a 767 a few years back. And that plowed into a very thin, poorly built masonry apartment complex. It did blast a hole through that complex, but here's the important point. The fuel blackened the facade of the apartment complex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any of that? People, barring the smoke that seems to be seeping out there, looking at it carefully, do you see any blackening on the aluminum cladding of the World Trade Center from jet fuel fire impact? No, you don't. There isn't any. The other thing is, the nose cone did not penetrate. The penetration was mainly from the fire and just the thrust. The nose cone's laying right there, smack against where the facade was. And the wing is sheared off and flopped right down. Right mm-hmm. down. Didn't penetrate. 747 didn't penetrate just masonry. There's no steel reinforcement there.
Yes. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a refinery on fire, but they spew black smoke, not white smoke.
This is another point. I don't know if they photoshopped some things, but in reality, all the eyewitnesses and all the non-goofed film, like the Brie and Bob film, they show gray or white.
Yes.
Whitish gray.
Yes, and the still photographs I have on my website have, and those are military shots taken from a chopper. They have white smoke. Now, white smoke is a result of moisture in the air.
Very important. Very important.
A liquid, and it wouldn't be fuel. Okay?
So that means that the concussive charges blasted the moisture out of the concrete, because concrete's full of moisture.
Yes.
That's a very important point.
Yes.
Then you could trace the type of explosive that was used by duplicating that. It's probably C4 and RDX and God knows what else.
I can tell you this, if you have an incinerator or a barrel and you're burning, let's say, branches and leaves and maybe some old lumber, and you take a wet piece of wood and throw it into the fire, the smoke will turn white until the moisture burns out. Okay?
Oh, and then she goes to the
It goes back to black.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that means that the concussive charges liberated the moisture that's in particulate, you know, plastics and concrete and such, and even steel, it's all got moisture. Now, since we've been doing this, and then finally we brought up the issue of the strewn wreckage, where we asked some serious questions, such as, can two wheels, assuming that, you know, that Fox News is correct, be ejected from a inferno in the building with jet fuel supposedly, and can those tires not be burnt?
Especially in a fire that melted steel, okay?
Yes,
according to the official story.
Yeah, and you know,
well,
can those tires then eject out 700 feet and land on the on a curb without having like a skid mark?
Only if it's connected to a phony passport that lands on the sidewalk two blocks away.
A phony passport that was soaked in kerosene and then wrapped in plastic and handed by a pinstripe suit Mossad agent, by the way, not CIA, okay, Israeli agent, to a cop, and then the guy keeps walking. So we brought those issues up, and we asked the question, what is the engine doing 4.5 blocks or so away, just sort of sitting underneath the scaffolding? And
mm-hmm.
how come if it was ejected, didn't it tear through the awning because it's under an awning?
Yeah.
Why doesn't it have any heat, and why isn't it burning, and why aren't there any scald marks, and why isn't it charred? We were asking those things. And then you know what happened? As you pointed out to me, Doctor, don't forget to mention, we got attacked.
Yes.
We got attacked, and most of that attack was anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And then on your show, you asked the guy, hey, what are you doing being anonymous? Who are you? You know?
Well, let's clarify this, okay? You were being interviewed on the Rick Adams Show on Republic Broadcasting Network, and a particular caller identifying himself as Dave from Massachusetts. That's the name that everybody hears on that network. This person began attacking you. Now, why attack the person who's the messenger? Why attack the messenger? That's the first question that came to my mind, and it came to many of the callers' minds, didn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Yeah.
Okay, and so this individual has been deemed a provocateur, and an agent with an agenda. Now, the timing of this individual's calls has everything to do with the timing of our message and the delivery of this message.
Yes, I will tell you, there were a couple of attempts early on when I first started interviewing with Rick Adams by various fairly well-known individuals to try to disrupt that show.
Yes.
And then I paid no attention to it because that calmed down, and then all of a sudden, here's this individual, for example. Now, I want to get into this because it's very interesting. Here we have a situation where the Bible actually tells people and warns everybody about this faux praise, and Jesus was wise on that, right? God rest him. Watch out for the person who heaps the praise on you, right? Well, sometimes I have to learn my lessons through lessons. And here's a person who butters you up, okay? And butters you up some more, and you think the person's a pretty interesting person, right? If you're not really shrewd. Then there's the fawning praise, and that's done as a tactic. Don't think about me, think about life, people, to earn your trust. Remember Ruby Ridge. Remember, hey, can you help me out? We're broken down. And Randy Weaver stopped because he's a nice guy, and then they arrested him, threw him on the ground. So you get the trust going, and then it becomes your good buddy. Then that person becomes trustworthy in your mind, in your consciousness. So then when he comes and says to you, hey, do you know so-and-so? Well, he said this, and he said that, and did he really say that, mister? Oh, that's not, so all of a sudden there's this, this subterfuge where you're pitting one person at the other's throat. I mean, it happened to me.
Now, I heard that show, and for the sake of our listening audience, just to be brief, if I can interrupt just for a second.
Yeah, no, go.
This person, who I already described, calls into the show and begins lambasting another talk show host, Officer Jack McLam, who is a retired police officer, who in his career in Arizona could not be corrupted and eventually was pushed out of his position. Without going into all kinds of details that really are not necessary, there is no reason for someone to call up and make this man, who is a patriot, who is constantly warning people about things coming up the pike in terms of the New World Order and secret plans that are being underway to put people in concentration camps, take away your guns. He goes through the whole history and great detail. There is no reason for this man to become the topic of this conversation. This individual uses that opportunity to defame him and to lie about what he said. Now, another caller alerted you to that fact, and then you became the victim of the attack.
Right. It was other individuals who said, hey, this is not true. I investigated that. I found out that it wasn't true, and that there were, why would you lie, first of all, as you've said, on a Patriot Network? You're actually calling in and telling fabrications. They're just lies. So I found out that there were dozens of these lies. This person was saying that, say, Bob or Jim or Joe said this on this show. You review the show and it doesn't exist.
Yes.
He was taking credit for knocking a guy by the name of Fredenberg off the network. Here's the important point. I just talked to Bob and I talked to you. he was claiming that, that Bob was buddying up to Roger Fredenberg, and that proves that you, Bob, Mr. Phillips, Altrincara, it proves that he is a fraud, because if he's siding with Fredenberg, he's a fraud. That never happened. He didn't even, the guy didn't even call Fredenberger's show. I mean, that's, he just comes out of the woodwork with these absolute fabrications to sow discord. Now, the other thing that happened was emails started coming from another Massachusetts, Massachusetts, which was Mark from Massachusetts.
Yes.
And then you had an encounter with this, I understand.
I got those same emails. In fact, this guy started a web blog site, and he announced it on the radio. He was not once, twice, or three times. He called every show telling every talk show host that he had a blog site and that people should go there. And it became something rather perverse, if I might say so. It seemed like it was around Christmas time when this began. And then I started getting nasty email where he's telling me, that I'm evading the truth. Now, my listening audience has heard more truth on this show probably than on most in the whole world.
Yes.
They tell me this. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And I can recommend some other shows where they can go hear the truth. And Rick Adams' show is one. And I can recommend others. But the point here is not to drag other people into this. This guy has put himself upon us.
Right.
And it's been unsolicited, unwarranted, and it has everything to do with 9/11, because we're figuring out not just from what you've written in your book, but we're actually seeing who these people are, how they are infiltrating our society on every level. Government, they've already accomplished that. The banking system, they are the banking system. The petroleum industry, they are the petroleum industry. The pharmaceutical industry, they are that. The military industrial complex, that's their bread and butter. The international illegal drug smuggling rings, the war on drugs, the war on poverty,
taking organs out of people after they kill them. And I can tell you categorically, I already told you about Addis Isaac, who masqueraded himself as being Osman Hussein. So he was parading himself as a good Muslim, right? But at the same time, he had a provocative behavior, provocative attitude, and no one figured it out until he set the second set of bombings, and then the Italian police caught him, revealed his false passports and the passport ring, determined that he and everybody associated with him was Mossad, that they were planted by Israel to create discord in the Islamic community and to set up the scenario for World War III. It's more dire than just a little discord. That's happening to RBN. RBN is being targeted to undermine and create discord by the Mossad, by Mossad agents, not masquerading as Muslims, as I've been accused of ridiculous things, but you know, everybody has a chance to be ridiculous. But by people posing as if Christians, you see, that would be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not Christians, they're Jews, but they're under the cloak, and they're Mossad. And that I can prove.
Yes.
And by the way, I will add that I did query him. We talked about this crisis and how distracting it is and how our listeners got distracted, rightfully so, and upset. But I actually asked that query because, again, I mean, I'm caught in the middle. I'm trying to referee this thing. I'm hearing from callers. So I said, all right, where then, if you're a taxi driver, where do you drive?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm in Alaska. I'm in Cucamonga. I'm in South Carolina. Well, if you're a taxi driver, where did you work? Well, I'm over here. But if you're a taxi driver, where was your last taxi job then? Quincy. What? But that doesn't tell me anything. What taxi company? Yellow Cab. I've made two calls to two people at Quincy's Yellow Cab. Nobody. No Mark Becker, which is his one alias. No David Stanton, and no David Lentoff, which you researched.
Well, I did some research because I got these emails, and I have a right to know who's harassing me unsolicited, asking me to say something that number one, I would not say for the reason that this individual would like to hear it. You know, this is a provocateur. This guy is trying to provoke me or you or any of us who are speaking the truth. You see, this began in reference to what I've been publishing about Barack Obama, about his illegitimacy as a presidential candidate and even as a president. I will not back down from my research. I've got more, folks, yet to come, okay? What I've written is just scratching the surface. I've got more.
You know, now, this is what's happening. You know, this is the Mossad operative. And the technique is relatively effective because most people are pretty laid back, and if somebody's real nice and seemingly nice, but see, it's not the nice thing that gets you. It's the false praise that can confuse a person. And then you become so confused that when the hit comes, you don't recognize it.
Yeah.
And I was there in this situation. And so I'm saying this for the only reason of alerting people. Alert, be on high alert for Mossad agents, for spies, for people who... Because the only way they can undermine you is through false praise, by becoming a buddy, earning your trust.
Mm-hmm.
Beware of people who try to earn your trust.
Yeah.
I'm saying it to myself. I learned these, you know, from life.
Well, based on my genealogical research, it was pretty easy for me to figure out where I needed to go to find this person's name. And I found this person's name over 100 times. Over 100 times. And I,
that's
what's
not
interesting.
Normal.
No, it's what's even more abnormal is that there are no birth dates or no ages associated with this person, but it locates all of his addresses by city and state, and it lists relatives, and I put that in quotes, and associates, again, in quotes, and when you examine this, you find that these people have the same peculiarities, the same anomalies in how their names are listed in this database. Now, we know that this database and others like it are used for money laundering, especially in real estate. I've been talking about this for a couple of years now.
Yes.
And in addition to that, I have done genealogical research, which has uncovered more of the same corruption.
Incredible.
And it's, okay,
well,
we have proof.
You have much proof, but we have this recent Alona Abraham, who is on the list, I believe, for Flight 11, perhaps.
Yes.
And it's on, and this individual is still alive. This individual is a Mossad agent. All of her brothers and sisters are Israeli operatives.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have received slush money. We found that she had $25 million as of the late 1990s salted away in Nigeria. So, to terrorize Americans' money is actually used. And I must add that I would be highly suspect that this individual and those, so they're also spying like Jonathan Pollard. It's not just this RBN. We're dealing with high crimes and treason, or what we would call perhaps, far worse, which is to have foreign agents, both are worse. You know?
Yeah. Well, when our government is being extorted and blackmailed, and these people do this with impunity, no wonder they're allowed to do it. No wonder this is going on. And you can see the complicity in the government. You can see George W. Bush's pathetic visage in that classroom.
Oh yeah,
and of course,
Florida. Cheney, and as you bring that up, one of the interesting things about Cheney is that at the end, when people came up to him, broadcaster, and said, "What about this torture? What about your being an accomplice to torture?" He said, "You know, we did pretty good." What he's meaning is he lined his pockets pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all doing that. But
yes.
Back to this Mossad agent and
yes,
those
I'd like to describe a couple of anomalies that I ran into when I began the research, if I could.
Yeah, sure.
Because this pertains to what you're going to say. So I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah, no.
Okay, I get an email marked David Stanton. I do the check on David Stanton, and there's hundreds of David Stantons. No, none of them have an age. Plenty of cities, and I'm looking at the cities, and there's forts, Fort Collins or Fort Bragg, or, you know, you think of the name of a fort. It's in somewhere in this list. Then you see APOs, which are the military post office box. And there's references to places like Arab Emirates or overseas and all over the country. And this is a person that's been a cab driver, according to himself, his own words. It's on recording. And I've even addressed the issue of another name, and I'll come to that in a moment. But this is a person that claims he's been driving a cab. Why is his name in that database, and why, when you put that name in the database, does the first name come up, Deborah Varicchione? I mean, I put David Stanton in there, not Deborah Varicchione.
I think I might be able to explain something, but go ahead, yeah.
Okay, and then I get an email a week later, and it says Mark. And I went on this show, and I challenged this individual. You know, you send me a vitriolic email, and you ask me to say something that is in your mind you want me to say that has nothing to do with my message or my research or the truth that I'm bringing forth, and you don't even have the courage to put your full name there. So he sends me an email with the name Mark Becker. Don't underestimate my discernment. Do not underestimate my ability to research. Do not underestimate my intuition, and don't insult my intelligence, okay? I found the guy's name, okay? And the guy actually is from Delaware. Happens to be Joseph Biden's state, okay? Okay, now, it doesn't end there, okay? Mark Becker is really Mark Becker Lenhoff, okay? And he's got hundreds and hundreds of other aliases.
He's been an operative in the deeper levels as well.
Oh, yes. And he goes by David Smith. He goes by Gary Libby. There's a Gerald Lenhoff who's related to him. There is a professor at the University of Delaware with the same last name. He goes by, let's see. I'm going down this list. I mean, there are just so many. Michael Bell.
Well, we know his name isn't David Stanton. So that's an absolute fabrication.
In fact, many of these operatives have Irish names.
Yes.
You see?
Yes. Well, and you saw that on the blog where he emailed it to himself or fabricated a Rick Adams email making Rick look like he was attacking me. That's on there. But the other fabrication is, hey, you know, go get that doctor so-and-so, whatever, like a good Irishman that you are. So that's probably a code, you know, for the Mossad, that they use these Irish names. And you know what, people? This is a very important show. This is the show breaking a network of Jonathan Pollards for the sake of the United States and its future. By God, you share this information with everybody you know. It's true, and you can confirm it. Yeah.
Yes, another name, Paul Dixon, Paul McMahon, Peter Bianca. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Sure it is.
It's like
sure
a Black Widow spider web. It just goes
and
in every direction.
So what happened is that the Mossad has determined through its hirelings to infiltrate RBN and make sure that there is a sabotage any attempt by the people to gather some strength against these criminals.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And that's why it's important to talk about it. There's nothing wrong with giving names. Heck, you know, our names
are
out
aliases.
There.
Yeah. These are aliases.
Yeah, they're aliases, so we're not even giving any name. But, you know, this is because somebody else provoked this. They provoked us to take action and to reveal the real nature of these criminal acts.
Yeah,
because we're dealing with spies. You're dealing with people, dual nationals, even traitors whose purpose is to undermine the country.
Yes.
And at the same time, they're stealing.
Yeah, under one of the aliases, a name of a retired lieutenant general in the military is on one of these lists. Okay.
Well, is he listed as a Stanton or something else?
Oh no, it's one of the more recent aliases that I discovered. But what's interesting is this guy is part of a panel assessing the war in Iraq.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And I want to add to what you said. Why would you bring up, let's say you call a talk show, and instead of staying on topic or talking about your pet cat or something, you actually bring up a completely different person, and you start attacking that person. Somebody that has no relationship to the talk, and someone that, say, a talk show host like me, or maybe I don't know, Jack Lamb, maybe they call him and say, hey, did you hear this about this guy? He's a rat, you know? And so you know for sure something's going on.
Yes. Yes.
That's
and it's
not
it,
normal behavior in a talk show.
Yes.
They're going to call on the topic, or they might rant about something, you know, but not call and specifically disparage a totally different person. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's the point I'm making is that, you know, he began this call into the show with the intent of stirring the pot, and making false accusations about someone, and in reference to the topic that he could not get me to bite. He put the bait out there as if I was going to bite that topic. And I said, you know, you're making charges that I said such and such on the Rick Adams show. And I did not say that. There's an archive of the show.
Sure.
As there are archives of my show, I encourage people to subscribe to the BBS archives.
And well, here's proof. They can do it that way. We'll give you some proof right here. This individual said that Bob from Colorado was calling all the time and buddying up to Roger Fredenberg. We got some detailed information from our friend in Colorado. He never called the Roger Fredenberg show. Okay, this individual said that Jim and Bob ganged up and buddied up with Roger Fredenberg, and therefore their frauds didn't happen. Absolute
yep.
total lies, complete
yes.
absolute fabrications.
Now, do you think it's a
and
coincidence?
He's involving the callers, not just the host. He's involving all these callers. That means he's monitoring the entire network. He must have this operation going.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yes. Now,
and then he says something most fascinating. He creates another email address for himself, William Bell III, or God knows what it is. And then
yes.
he says that, "Dear Mr. Adams, I was once a loyal listener of yours, but now not anymore. With this crazy man you have on, all blah, 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 blah," and saying that now everybody's alienated from RBN because you're interviewing this guy. Isn't it interesting that everybody's alienated from RBN because of him?
and yes, and he brings up the no plane theory, which basically confirms my statement earlier that this began when we started revealing these discoveries about the videos that were released on 9/11 by the media and compared. And we've also compared the No Day Brother film, and we've gone down the rabbit hole on the No Day Brothers.
Yes, we have. Let's get into that now, because the No
yes.
Day Brothers are also Zionist spies. This is very important.
Yes.
Their film was produced by Susan Zirinsky, who's an arch underminer of this country, and she was the chief coordinator of this propaganda film. But the No Day Brothers were almost ruthless if you really watch them. Here, you know how you can tell, and the police know this, this induration around the eyes, this induration in the eyes, something suspicious when you have
mm-hmm.
that. And they're just very unemotional, very cold. And you brought up the fact that they're reading from a teleprompter. Now, what's important here is, are they who they say they are? Are they really French amateur videographers?
Well, their French accents are not genuine French accents. I speak French. I speak fluent French. I have since second grade. Okay, that's a long time ago.
You would know that I didn't hear any French coming out of them, any indirect.
No, there is no syntax of a Frenchman who speaks English. I know people. I mean, listen to Kissinger and his phony German accent. He can turn it on with the snap of a finger,
make you
think that he just came across the pond last week.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are speaking with an artificial French accent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You brought up the interesting thing about the Gideon and the, you know, Cedillas and how that seems to be, and then the Jules Clément, Naudé, and then when you search for this lineage, it does not exist in France.
No, it
nor
doesn't.
Nor is there any history of them being French videographers. And if you were a French videographer or a French film artist, why did you get your degree supposedly in New York University?
Yes.
So why would that make you French? You know, the claim is they've been here since 1989 in the United States. So I would say to you, who has checked to see whether these guys are really graduates from the film artistry of New York University? I say no. No.
Yeah, well, we know that now about Barack Obama, that he didn't even go to school in Hawaii from the photos.
Yeah, you do know that. For sure you know that.
Why would anyone fabricate photos? These photos are fabricated, which brings us back to 9/11.
To conquer the American,
and the Naudé brothers.
Oh, the Naudé brothers, yeah.
We know with a certainty that Jean-Jacques Naudé, who is the editor-in-chief of American Photo, lives at 1633 Broadway, or has a business located there in New York City. And we also know that he lives in West Hollywood, California, as does Monique Naudé. And the Naudé brothers, one is married, Jules is married to Jacqueline, who is a realtor specializing in distressed prime properties.
Mm.
So you're talking about people that can't pay for their mansions or you know, foreclosures on homes. Distressed prime properties,
laundered money through the Zionist cartel and playing around with it.
Yeah, and it shows. Now there's a woman that lives there with them by the name of Mercedes Longa, who is from Venezuela, and we tracked a divorce there. She was divorced in Venezuela, and she is supposedly the mother of Jacqueline.
Now, our suspicion is very high that these boys are South American, not French.
That's correct.
That's confirmed by that, then.
Yes. Now, I've been around the world, and I've seen people from different cultures, and I can tell you they look more Hispanic than they do French.
Yes, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
And so some of the Jewish immigrants settling in that area, more likely than France, because there are a lot of Naudés in that area, in Venezuela.
Yes.
There are just as many, seemingly, in that area as there are in France. But the fact remains, it's a cover-up or a disguise to call them French filmmakers. They didn't come from France. According to the official story, they were in New York City since 1989 and got getting degrees. How does that make them a French filmmaker?
And
they
what
have
I
no
see
record...
From-
You know, they have no record of being writing any film in France. That's a fake.
And what I've seen from the film, they did not do the editing, and they did very little of the filming.
Well, CBS did it. And this is criminal. You're dealing with Zionist spies, definitely Mossad, who are involved with that fire crew and other fire crews. They know full well that those buildings are going to be exploded. They secretly are infiltrating the system, and they seem to do just fine. And then all those civil servants are dead. All those common people are dead. All the whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These guys watching this, you know.
Yes. Now this trail of aliases leads to IT companies, hospitals, medical facilities, attorneys, publishing companies, all in the same building, all over the country, folks. This is not normal. This is not normal that every alias leads to a network or a nest of these spies. And
so
once you
get a spy, you have the nest. That's the interesting part. I categorically am telling you, not oh maybe, oh possibly, that Dave from Massachusetts, Mark from Massachusetts, this man is a Zionist spy. You have him. He's in your hands. You have the biggest opportunity ever to get this country back on its feet. It's going to lead to a network of spies.
Yes. And this is why you are being attacked very unfairly. I have to say, you have not said or done anything other than print the truth. You are meticulous. You're worse than my publisher at the Idaho Observer. I'm just joking, actually.
Yeah, it's in that respect. Even on the radio, I was refereeing this situation. It was the Bobs and the Jims and the Keiths who said, wait a minute, I didn't say this, I didn't do this, this didn't happen, that talk show host didn't say this, you know, and that led to this investigation.
Yeah.
Somebody said the other day, you guys should make up and kiss. It's not a personal thing, man, you know, what? What are you talking about?
The ultimate reason this is happening is because the truth is being revealed.
Right.
Simply.
Right.
And
cannot allow this to go on any longer, because all it is, like you said, an attempt to derail the investigation, an attempt to prevent the data from being, brought out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever in your life, well, I'm sure it occurred in the Kennedy assassination, same thing. All the evidence was scooped up, shoveled up, swept up, disappeared, hosed off, and maybe a little air freshener sprayed around.
Yeah.
And still today, people know who was involved in that murder. Why is it that when mass murder or murder of these proportions is committed, that it's allowable to form a commission of people who are going to whitewash any genuine investigation and corrupt it even further? We had mass murder occur on 9/11. We had mass murder occur in London. We had mass murder occur in Spain. We had mass murder occur in a Bali nightclub. We had mass murder occur, if you remember, the ricin attacks in Japan.
Sure, absolutely.
Years ago. We had mass murder occur on American bases overseas when Bill Clinton was president. Nothing was done about it. We had two prior explosions in the World Trade Center prior to 9/11. Nothing was done about it. Oh, they had some faces that they showed on TV, and they were conducting these trials, and the media was reporting this. But remember, we've determined that they've shown us phony planes flying through the air.
Yeah,
okay?
Right. Right.
All right. So these people will do
a high level
anything.
Of suspicion that they took out the African embassies, not a Muslim group, with the same sort of detonator charges. So, in addition to what we know, the beauty of all of this is that it starts to reveal other terror attacks that Mossad and its Hamad Haganah and the other Zionist entities, who are really a surrogate to even more powerful groups.
Mm-hmm.
But now with this, there are less terror attacks. You see, the more you reveal, the safer the world becomes. That's how powerful this is.
Yes, and then a couple of weeks ago, didn't we announce and you were on the show here with me as well as
yep.
on another network. We did six shows about seven cities targeted for nuclear events.
Yes, and 2 days, and very wisely you said, would you help me with this? And I said I would, and then 3 days later, what happened? Newsmax magazine.
Yes. They came out with a bogus book that was written that seven cities were going to be attacked by Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Now, I remind the listening audience about the USS Liberty. Who do the sailors that were on that ship say they were attacked by? Who conducted that attack?
Israeli spies under cloak, where they were using U.S. Phantoms, and they erased their logo, their insignias. Yeah, so they killed those guys. They wounded the others, and they permanently psychologically traumatized the survivors.
And they were ordered by Lyndon Baines Johnson himself not to defend themselves.
This is the most vile of vile. As you know, I talked to Phil Turney the other day, and there's other survivors still left. They get nothing. Zero. Zilch. No investigation. Nothing. Whitewash.
Yes.
And the same is true of the Marine barracks. A lot of suspicion there. Remember, it was Mossad who said, we're warning you, somebody's outfitting a van, tough luck, Buster. We want you out of here. If you think you're going to flex your muscles, Reagan, somebody's outfitting a van with detonator charges. Just want to warn you. Same style. Remember September the 11th?
Yeah.
Here we are in August warning you that there could be two very visible buildings that could be smacked in the near future. Highly visible targets. It'll be the Muslims again. This whole cockamamie material.
So this is all about stealing money and murdering people to get it. And there are some big players involved. Going back to this individual, it was on the second name that I uncovered more people at MIT. You see, now we've got three or four major players involved with 9/11 as associated to MIT. And this individual's contact list on these databases where he's using these aliases leads to someone who was at the Queen's dinner when she came to the United States last May.
Yeah, sure.
She came here to get back her trillions that were stolen, okay, mm-hmm. by the central banks. And there's a particular scientist that has international connections from MIT and with Europe, again in the same field that I've been describing,
mm-hmm.
and it's her name is on a list with this individual. What is it
no
doing
doubt.
There?
There's no doubt about it. Look, they wanted this global military, so they had been sitting around for the last 15 years plotting out a course. Part of that is the low-level spy network that we ran into, but on the higher level is what you're finding. And even on a higher level above that, above Wolfowitz and Crystal and all the low levels, are the people who hire them.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
We found the company that reaped the biggest rewards, didn't we?
Oh, definitely. And then you have to go above that. So you get into things like Halliburton, but above that is Booz Allen, which is a globalist entity where Dov Zikheim hid after the Pentagon extortion or the Pentagon embezzlement. So he went to hiding there, Booz Allen, which traces them back, by the way, to the spies.
Booz Allen and Hamilton, actually. Yeah,
mm-hmm,
full name.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and Booz is a Zionist company, by the way. It's not a standard. Booz is a speculator on global crisis. Woosley is one of their writers and one of their associates. Woosley is Jewish. Woosley is a Zionist. Woosley was a former CIA infiltrator, like George Cohen Tenet. Woosley, James Woosley. Okay, he's not an American as such. American citizen, perhaps. But so that network ultimately goes to Rockefeller. He's the ultimate American source plotter of
yes.
this. Enter Edgar Bronfman, and you got a second associate. Enter the Oppenheimers through Australia, Frank Lowy then, therefore. So these are the higher-level operatives all we see is the face of Super Silverstein, and therefore Crystal and Krauthammer as well, Wolfowitz and Abrams and Pearl. They're well paid, but they have no power compared to these individuals.
Yeah, and
these are the
then,
individuals who run the spy networks, by the way. You know.
Yeah, and then we have Kissinger and Brzezinski.
Well, Kissinger is definitely a high-level Zionist spy. He fully infiltrated the United States government. He orchestrated he took over for the French, the Rothschild French in Vietnam. Brzezinski was was a cohort, a little bit different club, but same stock, you know, same animal.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's why this show is so important. Everybody must download it and share it, because you must have a high level of alertness, those of you who are workers, who are strivers, who are activists, who are movers, because the only way that you can be stopped is through infiltration. Now, whether that comes from a foreign entity or a local trader who's compromised, doesn't matter.
You know? Mm-hmm.
I took
and
one of your words there.
This is what's, yeah. Yeah, infiltrator, actually,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
This is, you know, people have been clamoring for the truth, and this truth did not come out on RBN, and I felt it was appropriate to I don't want to say come to your defense. Let's just bring the truth out and let the cards fall where
yeah,
they
let
may.
Let it go, because you know this wickedness is a house of cards if there ever was one. God is great. That's all we need. And I'll tell you, one of the other things that's I guess fascinating to me is this disinformation issue that is on the internet. It makes it difficult for our investigators in the field to always get their wrap around things. They eventually get there, but I'd like to speed it up. We have discovered that the disinformation artists have a certain technique. They alter photographs. You know that very well. They alter photographs of wreckage to make it look more appropriate. They do some interesting things.
They plant evidence, that's for sure.
Well, that's a very important thing. There wouldn't have been any wreckage if it wasn't planted. We saw that on the Pentagon lawn. So why wouldn't the stuff in the building, remember, they showed there were no forthcomings of wreckage in the Pentagon inside the building until the 13th, the 14th, the 15th. Which is very unreliable, because that's after the FBI and the NSA had complete access.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't rely on photographs of just, and even, let's say that wreckage wasn't, if you couldn't trace a plant, what difference does it make? You can't have a plane crash unless you can reconstruct the whole plane. You can't have one piece of engine and one teeny piece of fuselage and one piece of a rudder or something.
Now, how is it that a huge aircraft like that, with all the titanium that's in the turbines and all that metal,
tons of titanium.
How is it that the people didn't disappear? The people that were killed by that, why didn't they disappear?
Well, this is a very good point, because the bodies were recovered from the Pentagon. And people were wounded. April Gallup tells her story about getting out with her baby with some cuts and things and a little brain trauma, not good. But you're absolutely right. If you can incinerate titanium, you need about 4,000 degrees. Well, you should be able to cook all the people.
Yeah.
And of course, there was no titanium in there, the engines. There was no nose cone, as far as like a 757.
There were no wings?
No wings, no rudders, no plastic, you know, for your luggage. And where are the seats, by the way? Don't tell me you've got two or three seat cushions. Give me your 200 seats, and we'll have something to talk about.
And there were no passports either on that occasion.
No passports, no DNA, no bodies, no Arabic people or Muslim, nothing. It's just garbage. Absolutely, absolute corruption. And
yes.
But what they do is they post these sites where they put some pictures up of wreckage. They show some diagrams. They show the punch hole. But if you look carefully, they're trying to show you that the 757 went all the way to that hole, whatever that hole is, whether it was dug out by an end loader. They say now that it was an end loader that made it. I don't know. But how did the 757, since most of the rest of the walls are intact, how did the nose cone? It's all of these nose cone things. The nose cone in Shanksville went 400 feet into the ground. The nose cone in, you know, in the Pentagon went all the way to the punch hole, whatever, through five layers of the Pentagon, whatever. The nose cone in, you know, in the World Trade Center punched all the way through the 47 cores of steel and concrete. Ridiculous. When you look at the 747 crash in Amsterdam, the nose cone's in the front of the building, laying on the ground. I mean,
yes.
Give me a break.
Well, we've discussed the numerous hundreds of plane crashes through the years that have occurred right on airline tarmacs, airport tarmacs, and the planes have crashed in, on some occasions into a cyclone fence, and that fence even stopped the plane from moving.
The fence ate the plane.
And even with the plane on fire, it didn't eat up the tarmac. The tarmac is still there. Maybe
the tarmac
had some,
is still there? Okay.
You know, skid marks and that, but yeah. it didn't destroy, it didn't turn it to powder.
No. And, you know, on the internet, you see that they smashed that F4 or that Phantom 4 into a concrete wall. And you know something that's very interesting? They're going at 480 miles an hour. The wing does shear off if you look carefully. But what's most important is that 3-foot reinforced concrete, it doesn't even penetrate the whole piece of concrete.
Yeah.
Now, how are you going to, that's just concrete, okay, a little reinforcement. How are you going to, in any mind, take an aluminum can, you know, 767, and penetrate hardened Japanese 1-inch thick steel frame, and then also penetrate a 47 beams in the core surrounded by concrete and the concrete floors, which are reinforced with steel, and then go all the way through the other side, according to CNN.
Mm-hmm. When you watch the films in slow motion and you watch the World Trade Center repair itself as this jet is going into it, the wing, you know, the fuselage starts going in, the nose of the plane, the wings, the rest of the fuselage, and in between the wings striking and going in the building repairs itself. It's reminiscent of Gumby and Pokey. You remember those cartoons?
Yeah, of course.
With the clay figures, and they made them move around, and they sort of jumped around. That's what the video does.
Yeah, true.
The video has multiple frame blackouts, which would not happen on live TV, only when you're showing film. And these are composites. We talked about this on other shows, here on this network as on these shows we did on RBN. It's clear that you cannot see this happening in real time and get those video effects.
No way.
Cannot happen. The plane cannot, from one angle, be black, because the sun's not hitting it, and be totally lit up from the same angle, but from looking underneath the plane. In other words, from the same side, I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even get the shot that they got unless you superimpose a plane flying at that level of the building by making a composite. It's called special effects, folks.
That's right. They do it
in all the Star Wars movies. They do it in Lord of the Rings. And any movie where what's the movie that I can't even remember his name.
Yeah,
now.
You mean the he made several series with all those explosions and
where they're blowing up Washington D.C.
Yes, where the Capitol building blows up. Sure.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Right.
Those are special effects. Okay? That's what does that. Okay? They do that with models, and they do that, sometimes they actually blow up buildings. Sometimes they do exactly what they did on 9/11. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what happened to the building.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. We have on record, and I'm publishing this, the eyewitness accounts of people who were underneath the World Trade Center. all of them say that they heard a massive explosion, or they saw an explosion. They saw the building explode. None of the people who were, you know, within 100 yards, including David Hanshu and his associates, who he captured the photograph that's now very famous in the New York Daily News, they all said, we didn't see a plane.
Yeah.
However, at the same time, they said that they endured an explosion. Now, let's think about this, people. Let's just use our common sense, because there's a lot of people listening thinking, what? I'm still what? If you have a force that's going one way, it's going to create a reaction in that direction. So if a plane smashing into a building is going to push material the same direction. If you look at what happens, if you could just get the planes out of your mind, you see explosions pushing stuff out, popping glass out, popping concrete and plaster and gypsum, blasting it out, right?
And steel girders, too.
Now, that's a very important thing. If you analyze the NAST photographs, you will see that the steel girders are bent 20, 30, 40 degrees out, not in. You will see that the aluminum cladding is bent out, not in. You'll see the aluminum cladding bent out and flopping and turned around backwards, hanging off. You will not see any char on the aluminum cladding. You will see no melting on that aluminum cladding. You will see no jet fuel fires, which you see on the jets when they crash and it's very black. None of it. Zip. Zero. You will see no engine parts or any kind of a plane part in that building. You'll see people. Where's the jet fuel fire if the people are standing there?
Yeah.
Those people aren't photoshopped in. The PSYOPs people were trying to tell us they're photoshopped in. They're trying to get a breath of air because of the RDX and the C4 and the other explosives. I'm telling you about this white smoke. It'll choke you to death. All the military people know this. Now, they're trying to get a breath of fresh air, right? Do you know what happened? Boom! And then they popped out, and that's why they were falling. Boom! And they popped out, and that's what made them go out. Oh.
Yes. Now the Note 8 Brothers film, this is Jules, who is inside the lobby of one of the buildings, according to the story, right? He's narrating this. We don't know that he's actually even in the building. They tell us he's in the building, and he's describing this. And the firemen are standing around. The windows are blown out of the lobby of the building. And the reason is because all this jet fuel came down the elevator shaft and caused, because of the fire, it caused the windows to blow out. Now, why were there no char marks anywhere in that lobby?
Nothing. Zero char.
And the policemen or the firemen are standing around chit-chatting, pointing in different directions, carrying on conversations, or standing at attention like they're waiting for a bus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's obviously no jet fuel fumes or any concern. There's no fire. I mean, there are fires, but those are from the concussive charges, and then they would start some kind of an explosive fire. But there weren't any of these, huge, monstrous floors being engulfed. People were dying because of the explosions.
Yes.
There were blast injuries.
Their
skin was blasted off. They had glass blasted into them.
People are jumping from the buildings, and we're hearing explosions going off, and they're explaining it. Oh, it's not an explosion. It's just a body.
Those Mossad agents had the audacity and the premeditated tyranny to tell us on their, multi-million dollar money in the pocket film, and made money on it, that those sounds of concussive charges were bodies flopping on the ground. And they even got people to believe it or to hesitate to counter it. And yet you see, when you look at the corners of those glass panes, what's left, because most of it's blown out, you see radial cracks coming from the corner up at 30 and 40 and 45 degree angles, radiating cracks on the marble from the floor up. Jet fuel?
No. Obviously
high
not.
High crimes?
Yes. And then I, you know, we're out of time here, Dr. K, but I want to summarize this by saying, why is there no murder investigation? Why? We have to ask that question. That's a legitimate question. Why was the evidence scooped up? Who benefited from that? What? Well, obviously, everybody who participated in the planning and the carrying out of the event.
Absolutely.
We know that. But
because
why?
There is no government. There is no republic. There is no legitimate. This country is run by a dictatorial fascist regime. There's only fascism rules here. And how could you get any? How could you think you have any rights when you're under fascist rule?
Yes.
Those fascists have to be gone long ago before you can expect anything injustice. But that's what we're talking about. And that's what America is waking up to. And God bless the people. And I'm impressed by their, you know, dedication and their working overtime. They found this out. What a deal.
And people are waking up to it. And this message will not die. This message will not die.
I swear to you, in God's name, it won't die.
And I want to thank you for being on the show tonight and having.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. God bless you.
Having the courage to do the work that you're doing and to print the truth and to do the research that you're doing. And we had intended tonight to talk about, if you remember the last time you were on, we were going to talk about our health.
Yeah.
We have you on two times next week. Actually, next Monday and Tuesday you'll be on the show. And
okay.
Hopefully one of those nights we'll be able to touch upon that.
Okay.
Again, I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to thank everyone out there in the listening audience for your prayers in concerning my father and our family. And, you know, you all are becoming part of my extended family, just on the kind things that you say about this show and our guests. I get tons of email from a lot of you, and I can't respond to all of it, as you know, but it's always appreciated, and our hearts go out to you. You are the reason this show exists. So, Dr. K, thank you.
You're welcome. God bless
and,
you.
And I'm going to say goodnight to everyone. Special thanks to Don and Doug and Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. And most of all, you, our listening audience, for tuning in. I want to encourage you to get Dr. K's book. You can go to knowledgehousepublishers.com, Order Wrongly Blamed. If you haven't read it, you must read it and pass it around to your friends. In the meantime, I wish all of you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.